I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about a Hoosier institution, the Indiana State Fair. The theme for this year's State Fair is the Year of the Farmer. We'll discuss not just all the fun and activities associated with the Indiana State Fair, but the challenges and opportunities confronting Hoosier farmers. My guests will be Leslie Gordon, Communications Director for the fair, and Heather Hill, a Greenfield farmer whose farm produces hogs, corn, and soybeans. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or tumble upon us on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the Indiana State Fair, which is underway now and runs through Sunday, August 23rd. This year's theme that the fair is celebrating is the Year of the Farmer. It is a beautiful day out there. I hope a fair number of you are out there at the fair, no pun intended. If you'd like to join the conversation and share your memories of the fair or your hopes for it, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are joining us by phone, Leslie Gordon, who is the communications director for the fair. And here with me in the studio is farmer Heather Hill from Greenfield, that's in Hancock County, whose farm produces hogs, corn, and soybeans. And literally, she is operating almost in a glass house these days. We can talk a little bit about that. Welcome to both of you.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Certainly. It's good to have you both here. Well, Leslie, talk with me a little bit about what's new and different at the fair this year.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is the Year of the Farmer, and we were happy to partner with Dow AgroSciences to make that happen. And part of that is really highlighting 17 different farmers each day and their commodity groups and, you know, what they sacrifice to feed our nation. And I love the fair because we have a lot of educational touch points about those different commodity groups and what it takes to produce that, how many are fed. And so that's something you'll notice around the fairgrounds. Besides that, we have some great entertainment this year. I say our free stage is a big highlight right now. We had Happy Together last night, and we're looking to see the Creedence Clearwater Revisited tonight. We still have Casey and the Sunshine Band and Big and Rich on schedule, so a lot of fun, and that's all included with your State Fair admission. One visual thing is we added a kind of a cool pedestrian plaza right in front of our Indiana Farmers Coliseum, so you can check out the fairgoers and enjoy your favorite fried treat. And then speaking of food, we have some great signature food contestants this year, and our winner is the smoked pig patty. So we're seeing lots of fun and new things out at the fair.
And I'd like to ask real quickly, how did you to settle on making this the Year of the Farmer? What was the process that went into making that decision and deciding that that would be the theme?
Yeah, well, many would argue that it's always the Year of the Farmer at the fairgrounds, and I think in a sense it kind of is, so we wanted to make sure that we took a year to really emphasize that and honor those farmers and families. And once Dow came on and became a sponsor and they worked closely with our farmers, it just kind of, it seemed like a seamless transition into making them the highlight and focus of this year.
Okay. Heather, talk to me a little bit about how you got dragged into this. As I understand, you what you are doing right now is literally you are under glass, I mean, to some degree. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yes, the Indiana soybean farmers 3 years ago built the glass barn out at the state fair, which is an awesome opportunity for fairgoers to come and learn about different farming operations in Indiana. And there's many different areas so that you can truly see how the crop goes from the farmer's farm all the way to the grocery store. And we are lucky enough to be one of the featured farm families in the glass barn. And so every day at 11, 2, and 4, one of the featured farmers is doing a live chat via FaceTime from their farm to the glass barn for those fairgoers to come and watch. And just an amazing opportunity to really be able to interact with farmers and learn more about their operations and everything that goes into producing food, not only for their families, but for fellow Hoosier families.
How did you get selected for that? I mean, there are a lot of soybean farmers in this state still. You know, what brought you to the forefront there?
Well, definitely there's a lot of soybean farmers. The Soybean Alliance and their board kind of decided that they wanted to focus on a soybean farmer, a dairy farmer, and a pig farmer in the beginning. And I can actually remember when my friends at the Soybean Alliance contacted me and asked for a list of fellow pig farmers that maybe would be good to feature in the glass barn. And I provided them with several names, none of which were my own. And next thing I knew, they were calling saying, we want to feature you. And so it was very humbling and an honoring experience. It's a lot of fun to be able to share our story with the fairgoers and throughout the year, because there are field trips that are held at the glass barn, even when the state fair is not in session, where we sometimes will do the live feed to those field trip goers.
What does, when you say you do the live feed, what does that consist of?
It's usually about a 10 to 15 minute chat where when I do my personal chats, I'm actually in one of our pig barns. I'm in our farrowing barn, which is where the mother pigs come to give birth to their baby pigs. Okay. And so I have my iPad set up and we transmit it via FaceTime. And so those in the audience can actually see where I'm sitting at the farm and see what I'm talking about. And, you know, it's a little bit of Q&A, so they can ask the questions that they have and just try to tell them a little bit more about our family farm.
How does that how do you square that with, working a farm, particularly at this time of year, is not an occupation that lends itself to a lot of spare time. So, you know, taking on this additional commitment, how do you manage to do that?
Well, I'm lucky enough that my husband and I farm with his parents. And so, you know, there's always someone there to kind of do something on the family. And this is something that we think is very important to help tell our story. We have three kids and, you know, we want agriculture to exist for them. And so we feel it's very important to take the opportunity to tell our story and help educate others. And so it was something that we really believed in and thought it was worth the time.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana State Fair, which is celebrating the Year of the Farmer this year. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Leslie, I'm assuming the fact that you do have beautiful weather out there means that you've had good-sized crowds so far. What are they coming to see overall?
Yeah, we have been. I feel like I couldn't order that in any better. It's been great since opening day. $2 Tuesday, I think, was one of our larger ones. We saw a lot of folks out. Always the food is great. But I've noticed there's been a lot of attention to our new Harvest Pavilion. Visit Indiana is sponsoring that. And we have our can construction contest, which is bringing a really cool spin on some traditional farm locations and visuals built with canned goods, and all those canned goods go to gleaners, so it's a really cool competition. And then the Lego construction has been really cool. We worked with Brick World, and they have brought in some Lego replicas, Lego brick replicas of different tractors, and they actually have robotic parts, so they're moving and functioning. And then we have a really cool farm layout, which it has different crops. It's actually pretty massive. It's definitely something to see. And we've also done a replica of our glass barn where all these cool farmers are having their live chats with the public too. So that's something that I've noticed that is new and that people are really enjoying and trying to find. I get that question quite often. Where's the Legos?
And, you know, one of the things people always talk about with a fair, obviously, is the fair food. You know, and I got to admit, when I, having been in newspaper work and then this, I've done a lot of stories and seen a lot of stories about fair food, and they almost always produce one of two reactions. Well, and often they occur at the same time. Boy, that really looks good to eat, and I can feel my arteries snapping shut just as I, just even thinking about it. What is the new treat out there, or that is getting people to line up?
Yeah, I would say one of our signature food contestants, Bartos Concessions, they made a deep fried corn on the cob, and that has got everybody just guessing, because we all love, you got to get your corn on the cob. I don't think anyone can come to the fair without it, but adding that classic deep fried feature to it has really been popular, and people are checking it out. So they've been flying off their fryers. It's been pretty cool to see.
And what other things are people lining up for out there?
Yeah, well, that smoked pig patty has been great. We still have the deep fried Oreos. I've seen, and now they have it in red velvet flavor.
Yeah, I was going to say that listening to you talk, cardiologists are hiring extra staff all around the state, but that's okay.
It's kind of crazy. To see them, I actually ended up getting a little more healthy option yesterday. I found a turkey sandwich, a deli sandwich, and I got them. Everyone's like, that's not fair food. What are you doing? But I know Dr. Veggie's always a popular one to get your deep-fried pickles fried up. So, yeah, and then in the morning, we have, especially during the 4-H season and the beginning of the fair, there were a lot of people ready for those giant cinnamon rolls and beignets. So it just depends on the time of day and what you're looking for. I think there's something for everyone around here.
Heather, you know, obviously you signed on for an extra commitment to do this. Presumably you did that because the fair means something to you. Could you talk a little bit about why the fair is so special to you and maybe so special to farmers here in Indiana?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me personally, I'm born and raised in Indianapolis. I'm kind of I'm definitely a city girl, but to see something so big and so great and so enriched in history and tradition is really great to be a part of. And this eye-opening experience for me this year has been all of the 4-H education. To see what these families put into raising these animals and bringing them to the fair and the pride they take into showcasing them, and that to me has been the coolest thing ever. I've learned so much. I'm learning about all these different breeds of animals and the classes and, you know, what judges are looking for and why that's important and the integrity in doing that, so that when these animals do re-enter our food chain, you know, they're safe and they're healthy. And just really understanding that process has been phenomenal for me. And I know out of all the state fairs, there's a lot of them out there. Indiana's really takes pride in being heavy on education and ag education. And I think that's really important to a lot of the farmers that come out here, that we still put a great emphasis on that and don't get lost in the rides and only the fried foods, and really talk about where that food comes from. And we have a lot of exhibits around here that make sure that whether you're young or old, you understand that process.
Heather, how about you? What makes the fair special for you?
Well, 4-H is definitely a big part of our family. My three kids are the fourth generation of both my husband and I's family to be in 4-H. And in fact, our kids are the third generation of our family to be able to show at the state fair. And so I have been going to the state fair since 1990 to show animals and be a part of that. And this year, our son, this was his first year to get to show pigs at the state fair. And so it's a very big part of who we are as a family. I know I grew up in Northwest Indiana, so coming to the state fair was our summer vacation. So it's a little bizarre to be able to just whip out to the state fair for the day and drive back to Greenfield. But we spent all of last weekend there with our pigs and showing our pigs, and that definitely is a big part of it for us, as well as exhibiting their other 4-H projects. In fact, I don't know if my kids have ever even walked out to the Midway. So the fair is definitely very special to us, and so being a part of the Glass Barn was a natural fit because we love the fair and 4-H so much.
What makes it, you say it's a vacation, but some of it, you're talking about duty, responsibility, all of that. What makes it fun for you? where's the source of satisfaction beyond the fact that you're doing something good?
I think it's the fact that we do it as a family and with our friends. Some those people in the barn, a lot of them come from other counties, and so we don't get to see them very often. And so the state fair is kind of where it all culminates together. I'm a proud graduate of Purdue, and that's where I get to see a lot of the people I went to school with that I don't see the rest of the year. And so it's not only that nostalgia and memories that my husband and I have from growing up and being able to build those with our children.
It's homecoming for farmers at some degree. Well, if you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana State Fair, which is celebrating the Year of the Farmer. My guests are Leslie Gordon, who's the communications director for the fair, and farmer Heather Hill of Greenfield, whose farm produces hogs, corn, and soybeans and is part of the Glass Barn this year. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the Indiana State Fair, which this year is celebrating the Year of the Farmer. My guests are Leslie Gordon, who is the communications director for the fair, and farmer Heather Hill of Greenfield, that's in Hancock County, whose farm produces hogs, corn, and soybeans, and she is actually one of, I guess your farm is one of the displays this year at the fair, right? One of the exhibits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Carol, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I love the fair, and I've only missed it about three times in my entire life, and I'm 79 now. I don't know if you or your guests can answer my question, but I want to go to the fair so much, and I don't have anybody to go with me. But I wanted to go, and I wanted to rent a scooter while I was out there, but they usually direct your parking clear to the infield, and that's way far away from where the scooters rent. Can you give me any insight on how I could get to where the scooters are to rent a scooter so I could see the fair?
I think that would be a Leslie question, so Leslie, we'll toss that one to you.
Yeah, sure. So I would recommend, depending on what time of the day you come, we'll be able to direct you a little better to some more accessible ADA and parking. That way you are closer to the scooter rental. And I know we have some really great staff. And again, as long as it's earlier in the day, I know there's plenty of us that would be happy to escort you to that area to make sure that you can get that scooter, because it is on our north end, and we understand that. We want to make sure that you can get around. But if you come in through Gate 6, which is off of Fall Creek, and it's definitely before our rush of, you know, after 5 when people get off work, we will definitely do everything we can to accommodate you.
Is there
I
a number?
From the south side, so if I come in Gate 6 off of Fall Creek.
Yes.
Okay. Which
that
side
would
of
be
the
fairgrounds
is that on? Is that on the that, south side or the north
that's
side?
That's on
or?
The east side.
It's on the east side.
East side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All
okay.
right.
And is there a number? If Carol may not be the only person in this situation. Carol, thank you very much for the call and the question.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Yeah. You can call our main line at 317-927-7500, and we'll be happy to assist you and get you to the right person and give you so we can get a heads up and help you get to where you need to go.
Could you give that number out again? People do not drive around with a pencil in their hands. So
that is true. Okay. 317-927-7500, and that's also listed on our webpage at indianastatefair.com.
Okay. And, you know, there is one change that we probably should ask about, and that is that you don't have live poultry there for the first time. Could you talk a little bit about that, Leslie?
Yeah. So we're working with the Board of Animal Health to in conjunction with their ban on the commingling of poultry due to the high pathogen avian flu. So it's not a concern for consumption, but it's definitely causing an impact on our farms, and it's definitely taking the lives of plenty of birds in our state. So we are trying to work through that, and as part of that, we've kept live birds away. So we have it's kind of a statement when you go to the poultry barn, because it's empty. We have a few rabbits, and we had some backyard chicks at the actual fairgrounds that we were allowed to still keep and show, because part of the ban is you can't take them to even be dealt with. But we were able to have them there, and they have some eggs that have hatched. So that's about all you'll see in our poultry barn this year. And so that has been taking an impact, especially on some of our 4-H'ers who are showing those. And we've been trying to encourage them to do some illustrated talks. And there are some stuffed chickens around there. And there's a lot of education about how to properly prepare chicken and what it really means. And, again, what that co-mingling means and what a backyard flock is. You know, we understand a lot of people, especially it's kind of becoming popular, too, to have your own raise your own chickens in your backyard, and the difference between that and commercial use. So it's an educational exhibit, but it definitely has taken a toll on that showing, and our barn shows it. It's a different sight completely.
Heather, you know, in participating in this and making, you know, and being part of the Year of the Farmer, what do you hope that Hoosiers, and I suppose others, because I'm assuming not everyone who attends the fair is from Indiana. What do you hope they will take away or they will learn about Indiana farmers and Indiana farms?
For me, I think it's just that Indiana farmers care about what we're doing, and everything we do, every decision we make is made with producing a quality product for not only our family, but for everyone else's families, to whether it's to eat or wear or enjoy in some other fashion, depending on what type of farmer they are. You know, my husband is the fourth generation of his family to farm there in Hancock County, and it's not something that he takes lightly. You know, this is something he wanted to do his entire life, and so we feel very honored to be able to carry on the tradition of our family and to learn from past generations, as well as embrace new technologies and innovations, so that we can make very educated decisions to know that we're not only making the best decisions for our animals, our crops, but ultimately for the food that everyone's going to consume. So I would hope that anyone that comes to the fair knows that Indiana farmers and, you know, essentially farmers from across the country, you can't find better farmers anywhere in the world than you can here in the United States.
We've gotten a Facebook question that's on point there from a regular listener named Marion. And if you would like to join the conversation by Facebook, you can do so. Find us at No Limits WFYI. Marion's question is, does Heather operate a confined feeding operation, and would she please discuss the ethics of intense confinement farming and current industrially dictated farming practices? Corn feeds ethanol in livestock, and is that ethical when animal agriculture is a major contributor, more than transportation, to climate change? Heather?
Well, we do raise our pigs in climate-controlled buildings. That is a decision that our family did not make lightly. Generations before us used to raise them outdoors. The Indiana climate is not very conducive to raising pigs outdoors. I have heard horror stories from my mother-in-law and from my grandfather. And so we feel very lucky to be able to raise our animals in buildings where we can not only protect them from the elements such as snow, sleet, hail, rain, but also from predators. Coyotes are very rampant in Indiana. I kind of hear them outside my bedroom window quite frequently. And so by raising our pigs in those buildings, we're able to protect them from those predators and keep their climate. Most of our pigs live at about 70 degrees year-round, and that's a top priority for us. So when we lose electricity, we have generators that run our pig barns. I don't have a generator for my house. So taking care of our pigs is our top priority. So we do have them in buildings. For us, we feel that is a way for us to provide the best care possible for our pigs. You know, I think there are many different ways that you can raise livestock. We're lucky to live in the United States where we can make choices. You know, pigs are not like a cow. They have a very different digestive tract. So contrary to popular belief, a pig can't sustain on a grass-based diet. They need to have that corn and soybean meal so that they can grow. And so we feel like we are making the best decision for our pigs, as well as, you know, our family, and taking care of those pigs is our top priority. But if, you know, we have a lot of choices here in the United States, we're very lucky.
Leslie, I'm going to ask a question that's sort of, because this is the year of the farmer at the state fair, you know, issues regarding agriculture have become more politicized in recent years than they have been in the past. I mean, we've had some pitched battles at the state legislature about, you know, and I know that there are people who would object to this nomenclature, but it's popularly known as the Ag Gag Bill. Other questions of that. How has that affected the way that the state fair has to do business and has to deal with what really is a new volatility in the discussion about agriculture and the production of the food that we consume?
Yeah, well, you're not doing an easy one, are you?
No, well, we got a smart audience. They ask tough questions.
They sure do. No, and, you know, it is something, and we have to really balance that communication. So we work really closely with our commodity groups. We keep those discussions open so that we know everyone's hot topics and what they want to see and what it takes to get some of that messaging across and how we can really help get their voices heard. That's from what I've seen around here, and everyone that's in charge and in helping make those decisions, that's really what it's about, is they try to bring as many people to the table. So whether it's through our commission, through our board, through our interest groups when they're on our grounds and having meetings and inviting us in, they're really sharing what they need to see in those areas to make sure that they can do their jobs and to make sure that we're getting the right message out about where they stand on those issues, without necessarily playing any favorites or sides. We have to kind of make sure that all those voices are heard.
Do you get pushback on that issue? Because I've got to say, just about any time we do a show that has any relation to food or agriculture here on No Limits, that is a concern we hear from listeners. And it is not one, at least now in the past couple of years, it was not one we were hearing even 5 years ago when this show started. Is it something that you have to deal with now more often, a topic of discussion than you would have a few years ago?
Yeah, well, I'm still fairly new to the discussion, but I definitely would say, yeah, we do get pushback as anything, because you can't please everyone. But I think it's the way you deal with the pushback and making sure that you're connecting the right people when there is that concern is really our role, and what we've been trying to do and continue to do better is. Because, yeah, you really can't please everyone in those decisions, and no one's going to be pleased when you know, the people up top make those decisions, and we, you know, we're dealing with it here. I think the biggest thing that we've been able to do and continue to try to do well is to make sure that when there is pushback, that we take those concerns seriously and make sure that, again, that they're connected to the right people so that we can help solve them or at least bring them more to the forefront.
Heather, has that made farming more difficult? I mean, the fact that there is a more charged environment now, and a lot of these questions that either weren't asked a generation ago now are being asked, or, you know, at the very least, you're under probably more scrutiny than you would have been than your in-laws or previous generations of farmers. Does that make the task more difficult?
It definitely adds new challenges and creates new opportunities, I guess. You know, you asked me about why we wanted to be involved with the Glass Barn. I think that's a prime example. You know, my in-laws would have never done something like that or ever thought they needed to do something like that. But we feel, my husband and I feel, it's very important for us to tell our story so that people can make an educated decision. You know, we by no means want people or want to force people to you know, do something a certain way, but we want them to at least listen to us and, you know, believe us when we tell our side of the story. They may choose to buy a different type of product or something, but, you know, I think just listen to farmers, ask those questions, but make sure you make an informed decision. You know, the internet is a great tool, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so make sure you're asking those questions of someone that, you know, is involved and can tell you something from a firsthand experience and not maybe just an observation or something they heard from someone else.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana State Fair, which this year is celebrating the Year of the Farmer. Although, as one of my guests, Leslie Gordon from the fair itself, points out, you know, in some ways that was a no-brainer because every year is sort of the Year of the Farmer at the State Fair. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Elizabeth did and pick up the phone and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment that I'm heading to the fair with my entry for the Greater Midwest Foodways Heirloom Recipe Contest. And I'm really excited. It's my first year exhibiting at a state fair open contestant. But ever since 1963, I was fortunate enough in my county, Hendricks County, to qualify for state fair through 4-H. And then in 1970, I was crowned Miss Hendricks County 4-H Fair Queen, and I competed in the Indiana State Fair Queen Contest, which was one of the best times that my mother and I had together in our lives. Lisa Childers was Miss Indiana State Fair that year, and she was my roommate.
Oh. So the state fair is really part of your DNA almost. I mean, it's a serious part of your life.
Yes, I was raised on a dairy farm, and we also showed ponies. And not only did we show in 4-H during state fair 4-H competitions, but we also showed in open competitions and in the various horse shows that were held at the state fairgrounds apart from the fair. So I've been up there many, many times.
Well, we wish you the best out there at the fair, and thank you for calling in and sharing your story and your memories. Really do wish you the best. Thank you very much, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
So, Heather, tell me a little bit, you know, you talk about you've been going to the fair, you know, forever, that it was your family vacation, and all of that. Do you remember your first time going to the state fair?
I do remember my first time going to the state fair.
When was it? I know I'm asking an indelicate question.
No. 1990 would have been the first time I got to show lambs at the state fair.
Okay, so and that's the very first time you went there?
Yes, I was 13 years old, yes.
Okay, and so what do you remember most about that first experience at the state fair? Because that's part of this story, too, that we get calls like that. We actually broadcast live from the state fair last year, and that was a large part of people would walk up and tell us about their first state fair experience or their most memorable state fair experience. So what do you remember from your first?
You know, prior to that, I had been to every county fair since I had been born, which I thought was a big deal. But then to go to the state fair and see that many animals in one building and to see so many different food options, it left an impression that this is a big deal. And I think we're very lucky to live in the state of Indiana where we have an amazing 4-H program and an amazing state fair that showcases the hard work of all those 4-Hers, whether it be through livestock or over in the exhibit halls, because those 4-Hers spend a lot of time year-round working on those projects, and it means so much to them and their families. And I just remember that impression of all of that stuff being on display and all those kids that have worked so hard with their animals being there to show them. And it left an impression that it was something I wanted to do every year and something that was very important to my husband and I to share with our children.
Have you ever missed one since 1990?
Not since then, nope.
Not since 1990. We are talking about the Indiana State Fair here on No Limits, which is celebrating the Year of the Farmer. My guests are Leslie Gordon, who's the Communications Director for the fair, and Farmer Heather Hill of Greenfield, who's also taking part in the Glass Barn. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Indiana State Fair today on No Limits, which is underway right now, and it's running through not this coming Sunday, but the next Sunday. This year, we're celebrating the Year of the Farmer at the State Fair. My guests are Leslie Gordon, who's the communications director for the fair, and Farmer Heather Hill of Greenfield, whose farm produces hogs, corn, and soybeans, and she's actually an exhibit of sorts at the State Fair in the Glass Barn. We got a call just before the break from a woman who was talking about her State Fair memories and how much that is part of really, it's a thread that runs through almost all of her life. Heather talked a little bit about that. But Leslie, that's an important part of this experience, right? For fair goers, is most of them see it as something almost intrinsic to their being. Can you talk about what a responsibility that is for those of you who have to organize the fair every year?
Oh, it's a great responsibility, but it's also a really great it's a very rewarding experience when you have families and people that are that vested and that knowledgeable about the fair and about exhibiting and their exhibits. So no, it's for organization though, it is a task. Many people are like, well, what do you do outside of those 17 days? And part of that is the planning. We really have to take our time and make sure that we're infusing the tradition and the history of what people are used to and still giving something new and exciting so that we can still continue to attract those younger crowds and make everything relevant. So yeah, it's definitely a balance of tradition with innovation. Mm-hmm.
So Heather, if I've done my math correctly, and that's I have to qualify that with an if all the time because math and I are not always friends. You have been going to the fair now for a quarter century, for 25 years. You said you've got three children?
Mm-hmm.
How old are they?
12, 9, and 6.
Okay, and are they all State Fair veterans now, too?
Yeah, they have been every year since they were born.
Okay, and what do they, what did you tell them about the State Fair when you were taking them there?
Well, we are big fans of the Rodgers and Hammerstein State Fair movie. So I have to admit, coming from
our State Fair is a great state.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So when we come to the State Fair and turn off of I-70 onto Keystone, when we make that left-handed turn onto 38th Street, the first day we all sing the song because that's what it's about. My husband remembers doing that with his grandparents to come to the State Fair for the hot air balloon race before he was in 4-H. And so we really didn't have to tell our kids anything about the State Fair. It's just been a part of who they are and who we are as a family. And it's something we look forward to every year. It's gotten a little bit harder because our kids actually started school last week.
Well, that's where I was going with this because, in part, the State Fair is still a product of a time when, the cycles of agriculture dictated all life in the farm belt. And that part of the reason we don't send kids to school during the summer or didn't send kids to school during the summer is because they needed to be home to work on the farms. That's changed. We do send kids to school in the summer. And I guess what I would ask first of Heather, and then I'm going to ask Leslie afterwards about how it's affected the way that the State Fair has to do things. But with Heather, how does that alter sort of the State Fair experience for them, the fact that they have to work around that now going to the State Fair in an evening means you're going on a school night often?
It definitely has changed things. So they went to school last Tuesday, and Wednesday is when pigs got checked into the state fair. And so, good or bad, since we live close, I made them go to school. And my husband and I kind of took the first couple days and did the chores and everything ourselves. They did get to miss school on Friday because that's when they started showing their pigs. And so everyone at school kind of thought they were rock stars because they already got to miss a day of school. You know, we're very lucky that the state legislator passed that law in 2014 that they can have 5 excused absences for showing at the state fair. So that is great. Our school is great to work with us. All the teachers wish them luck. But it definitely is very different. On Monday night, you know, as we watch the grand drive, they are sitting there doing their homework while watching the grand drive of all the animals. And so it definitely has changed things. You know, you talked about how farming used to kind of dictate everything. My husband and I were married on July 29th because there was, you know, planting and harvest were not happening then. The county fairs were all over. We literally got married, went on our honeymoon, and the very next weekend we're back at the state fair checking in animals with our siblings at the state fair.
That was your honeymoon.
That was our honeymoon.
Well, I'm not sure which is the better story, you guys singing the theme song of the state fair as you approach it, or that one, but they're both very, very good. Leslie, talk to me a little bit about how the fact that we are now having kids go to school during the summer, how that has affected sort of the logistics of putting the fair together.
Yeah, it's we've seen a decent impact, but I will say one of the reasons in 2008 that we moved to a 17-day fair was potentially to accommodate this and to be able to include some more of the pre-fair activities that were happening before the fair started for those 4-H'ers to be able to have them experience those parts of the fair. So, and now it's kind of nice that we did it, but they're going back earlier and earlier, it seems like. So it's still something we have to consider in planning and how we do those shows. I know we have a band-aid competition that we moved from a Friday to Saturday because those students were in school. So it's something we continually evaluate every year with planning and scheduling. And we're seeing a change, but we're definitely still seeing participation and seeing families, like Heather said, you know, working with the schools and working with, you know, sharing responsibilities to make sure that can happen and they can still enjoy the fair.
And has the change in the school calendar affected attendance at all, Leslie, that you're aware of?
No. The biggest thing we've noticed is that when we moved to that 17-day fair, we had a more spread out attendance. So you definitely see people taking their time or understanding that they still have some room or that there's that added weekend that they can come. But we still are seeing consistent entry numbers and participation, but it's definitely something we have to keep in mind and continue to discuss each year we plan.
How many people will come to the fair? I mean, if your projections hold, how many people come in an average year?
Yeah, on average, we say about, you know, a little more than 900,000. Last year, we saw 954,000. So, we've seen over 1 million, so we're just in that range. So quite a few people.
So are you on projection? I mean, because you have had some really good weather so far this year. Are you on projections to hit that 954 this year, would you say?
From what I've seen, I actually haven't seen official numbers yet. But from what I'm understanding, we are right on par from previous years. The weather is definitely helping us, and we hope that lasts through the end of the fair for sure.
And is it one of those things where if you do have a spate of god-awful weather, like, you know, 5 days of rain in a row or whatever, that really tends to drive attendance down?
It can. We definitely have a lot of options here. That's one thing I do love about this fair is it's huge. So if it is raining, there are plenty of indoor activities. But, yeah, the weather is definitely a driving force sometimes. So when we see those forecasts, we just try to plan ahead and with messaging to let people know of the indoor activities that they can do to still get that fair experience.
And let me ask this. I mean, I'm going to ask both of you this question, because you see the fair from different perspectives, and both clearly love it. What is an exhibit, an aspect, something that goes on at the fair that is really, really special and that not enough people go to see? This is your opportunity to drive people toward seeing that. I'll start with you, Leslie, and then I'm going to give Heather the last word on that one.
I'd have to say, and I think this is a hard question because there's so many things that people can take for granted sometimes at the fair. But
yeah, it's a bit like choosing among your children, but I get that. Yeah.
But if I had to pick one, I think I would pick Pioneer Village right now because I think the north side gets a little neglected occasionally. But Pioneer Village is one of those great little nods to just how we've evolved, but definitely how some of those traditions are still ingrained in a lot of our families, especially those agricultural families that come out. But they hold to their traditions. They put on a great show. It's such a cool area, and a lot of the things that they use, a lot of the enhancements. I saw a girl on this box scooter the other day in our parade, and you know, we have these automated scooters that move automatically now, just to see that transition of how things have come, and you know, the things kids played with in the past, and just the tractors, the technology, that to me was fascinating. And I don't think enough people really invest the time to explore that area. I mean, you can barely find a piece of plastic in Pioneer Village, which I just think is so cool to see. So if I had to pick one, I think there's a bazillion, but I would say Pioneer Village for sure.
Okay. Heather, how about you? I mean, you see it from a different, where's a place that people don't pay nearly enough attention to, or an exhibit at the state fair?
I would probably have to say the 4-H exhibit halls. They're kind of a little bit off the beaten path, or, you know, on the north side, but kind of back in a corner. They're air-conditioned buildings, so it's a great place to check out if it's hot or raining, as we've talked about. But people may or may not know that all those exhibits in there were done by 4-Hers, which in the state of Indiana is students from grade 3 through grade 12. And, I mean, there's exhibits there from all 92 counties and several different project areas. There's so much hard work that's gone into that. And, you know, go in there, ask questions, figure out what you're looking at. I think it's a great opportunity to see what the youth of Indiana are doing. We really are in good hands.
Is that how you got your introduction to the state fair? Was it at the 4-H exhibit hall?
Absolutely, through 4-H, yep.
So do you go there every year?
We go there every year. My daughter, this is her fourth year of 4-H, and she's been somehow lucky enough to have a project in the exhibit hall every year.
Oh, what was this year's project?
This year it was her soil and water poster, and my son had some frozen cookies and a vet science poster. So we've been very lucky.
So both of them, and they're your two oldest?
They're my two oldest, yes.
And your youngest one is six, I think.
Six, so she's not in regular 4-H yet.
So she's got, yeah, well, she can't until she gets to third grade.
Correct.
Right? So
right.
She's waiting at least 2 years.
Right.
I'm guessing. So if people want to put a face to your voice and your name after listening to this show, and they go to the fair, they go to the Glass Barn, when can they do these FaceTime chats with you about your life as a farmer in Greenfield?
Well, there's a farmer doing a chat every day at 11, 2, and 4. I will not be live again until Saturday, and then I'll be live again on Monday. So this Saturday or on Monday, I'd be glad for anyone to head out to the Glass Barn and learn a little bit more about our farm.
Is it all three of those times you're live?
11, or? 2, and 4, yep, all
so,
three times.
So you basically own an entire day when you do
yep,
this.
Yep, correct.
And you have to clear out an entire day. What do you plan to talk about on Saturday?
I talk a little bit about the different stages of our farm as far as the mother sows coming in for the farrowing process and how that works and how long the baby pigs stay with the mother and kind of how the process goes from there for those pigs to move from birth to market. I talk a little bit about how all the corn we raise on our farm is used to feed our pigs. You know, just the exciting aspects of being a farmer. A lot of times I get asked, what is my kid's favorite part? So we just kind of try to see what the audience wants to learn about, and I try to be an open book to answer those questions that people have.
And is there a chance if they've been listening to this show and they ask you to sing the theme song to State Fair, you would do that?
Maybe. I'm not going to say I have a good voice.
Okay. Leslie, if people are making plans for this weekend or the coming week, you've got just under a week and a half left. For the fair, What are some of the highlights that they have to look forward to over these next 10 days?
I would definitely say to come and check out our free stage in Dow AgriSciences Celebration Park. Heather hit the nail on the head there with the 4-H exhibit hall. It's a great spot to really see the 4-H side of what in the variation in it. It's not all just animals, too. There's a lot of different projects that students can bring in. I would definitely go to the live chat with our featured farmer. We have the Shanko concert series for the rest of the week. We have some great discount days, so plan your day ahead, your plan ahead. And we're actually working with NASA to do a really cool feature in our glass barn about how they're growing food in space. So I think that will be a really cool thing for next week to check out. So I say the best way to make sure you get the visit for your type of fair experience is to check out our smart app and our website at IndianaStateFair.com.
And again, if people have, like the listener named Carol who called in, if they have questions about, you know, accessibility or anything like that, could you give them, give folks the number again that they can call to get information?
Yes, they should call 317-927-7500. That's our main line, and they will be able to direct any question you have and get you the right answer.
And Heather, in terms of your experience in working as part of the Glass Barn, what has been the biggest surprise for you?
I think just how engaged people want to be to learn more about where their food comes from and learn more about farmers and connect that face to a farmer. You know, I think about where my kids go to school, and I think people always knew we were farmers, but because of the Glass Barn, I cannot tell you how many people ask us not only about the Glass Barn, but about our farm, about the state fair in general. It's just encouraged that conversation, and to me, that's very exciting.
And what sort of questions do they ask you specifically?
You know, a little bit of anything. You know, just how many people work at our farm? What do we do on our farm? It goes the whole gamut. But it's just the fact that people are asking those questions. That's all I can encourage people to do is, you know, if you have the opportunity to talk to a farmer, ask a question. Don't make assumptions. Don't believe necessarily something you read somewhere else. Take the opportunity to ask that question.
So my last question for each of you that's been in my head ever since we talked about it early on in the show. Have either of you had yet the deep fried corn on the cob? Leslie, confession?
I have. I've actually had it a couple of times, I must admit. I've shared it, though. I've shared it. But yes, I did try it, and it's worth it. It's a little different from your typical corn on the cob, so don't think you're getting just that, but it's great. That flaky crust definitely does it justice.
Okay, Heather.
I have not, because I'm a little partial to the smoked pig patty, and I've had more than one of those during my time at the fair so far this year.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you and talking with you about the State Fair. My guests have been Leslie Gordon, who's with the State Fair, and farmer Heather Hill of Greenfield. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.